see. Special meeting of the House Labor and Commerce Committee. Time is 1:25, March 15th. Don't intend to take any action on the bill today other than a work session in order to come up with a committee substitute to answer some of the questions and concerns that we have expressed and have heard expressed in testimony up to this point. Members present, Representative Navarre, Representative Copeland, and Representative Hanley. And Representative Copeland, I understand, has to leave for a finance committee meeting, subcommittee meeting. And hopefully there'll be other members who will show up at some point during our discussion today. The bills we have before us are House Bill 130 and House Bill 90, relating to labor relations and collective bargaining. With that, I'd just like to open it up for informal discussion of the bill, and we have Mr. Cooksey here, and I know Mr. Green's here, and several other guests that we can ask questions of or ask them to provide us with information on. And, Roger, do we have a sign-up sheet?
Not on the work session.
Still haven't signed up. It doesn't make any difference to me. Today we were going to work on some amendments or suggested amendments for House Bill 130. Representative Hanley, Senate Bill 78, committee substitute. I read that. It seems there's a lot of good ideas incorporated in that. Mr. Cooksey, are you familiar with the committee substitute for House Bill 78? I mean, for Senate Bill 78?
Somewhat, though. I didn't bring a copy with me, and I haven't reviewed it in the last couple days.
That's yours.
I've got myself confused.
I'm looking at the, they're assuming 26. This is absurd. I mean, there are two districts that have contracts, and I don't think we have to give them anything, but I mean, let's ask for a week. Okay, you know, one half investigator, one half clerical, and give them a little time. Because there are only two districts that their interest has been expressed in writing new contracts.
Why don't we just ask them to fit it into the staff they already have?
And get I'm going to give them a little. You know, I don't want to be mean.
Whatever. Did that pass that, I guess?
What
78, Senate Bill 78.
There's a Hess version and a Rules version.
Oh, the Rules version.
I'm looking at the Rules version. I'm not sure.
Where are we now?
We're on the Rules version.
I've been trying to compare some of the different ones and what some included, but I've got a 502 here from last year. Too, I guess this was the House bill of last year, but that's got some things in the 78 has.
Mr. Chairman, maybe speed up a little bit. If you're speaking of the rules version of that Senate bill last year, we had real problems with that one. There were considerable limitations in there that were problems for us.
That's the one I was talking about, and what I wanted to do was bring it up and talk about some of those limitations and see whether or not there were some in there that you could agree with or that you thought we could accommodate or at least put some types of restrictions in the bill. You could join us at the table if you'd like.
Could we also have a Senate version, which seems reasonably use some of the Senate version?
This is the Senate version. No, this is the Senate version from last year.
Oh, I'm looking at this year's proposed Senate version.
Which is this year's proposed Senate version. Yeah, anybody who likes can join us. We seem to only have a few, so.
Okay, that's.
Ask Neil show that Representative Collins and Doctor are present.
I asked Neil Pierce to join me at the table. Gail is president of NEA Alaska and is somewhat familiar with this version also.
I'd just like to address. Did you get them copies too? Yeah.
No.
Last year's. Please have to do something. I'd like to address a couple of Representative Davis is also present.
We have a bill up before
finance.
No, no, I'm just looking at it.
I'll just go up and make a statement on the bill and finance and come in.
Okay. On page 5 of that Rules Committee substitute for Senate Bill 78, line 9, says a notification from the mediator to the agency shall indicate the items that impasse and that qualify for arbitration determination. I would assume that you'd have a problem with that.
Our thing about what should go to arbitration are those items that were not resolved. Some items can be resolved during the mediation process. If you have other items that aren't, then they should go to the arbitrator. And they, in terms of what's bargainable and all that, we feel that the court has pretty well addressed that issue. And even though the court may indicate you should go ahead and address that further, I feel that's a whole big issue in itself. And the fact is, since that court decision, we haven't been back in the court for further determination. We've pretty much lived by what the court has already said on that issue.
Okay, how about on page 6, line 1, beginning on line 1, the arbitrator may propose compromise to points in dispute. Do you have any problem with that? I mean, it's simply a...
That's what's being proposed in 130. The wording isn't the same, but the concept is there. It's the allowing the arbitrator to act as a mediator once the issues have been given to the arbitrator.
Okay, also in line 23 on that page, the arbitration award may be implemented in a school district only if the award has been approved by a local municipal government in the case of a city and borough school districts, or the legislature in the case of regional education in Tennessee area. What are your feelings on that?
My feelings on that, same have been for years, is that we've tried to retain what we call a role for the school board. And if the school board is really going to be a buffer in the bargaining process, then maybe we should bypass the school board and just bargain for assembly. So we have concern with this kind of action.
Yeah, one of the concerns that constantly been brought up during our hearings on these bills is the fact that school boards and administrators would like to see some form of local control.
Mm-hmm.
And if the arbitrator is from, whether he's from in-state, which I think almost everyone objects to, or from, especially from out-of-state, they may not be quite as aware of what local atmosphere or might be like, and they might make a mistake, so that rather than having the borough assemblies do the negotiating, they would simply be saying, yes, they made a good decision, or no, they made a bad decision. And I mean, that seems to be a something that could be acceptable.
Well, we feel strongly that the bargaining process should be resolved between the school board and teacher groups using the arbitrator is appropriate. Going back to city council for approval or borough assembly for approval, it's just one step short of what a former governor proposed, and that is all contracts go out to vote to the public. And we prefer to keep the resolution at the arbitration level.
My other concern with this one, Dan, anytime, this is going to be real informal today because I just like to get a bunch of interaction back and forth. So anytime one of the committee members wants to ask some questions, feel free. One of the things, reasons why it particularly appeals to me is the fact that in the negotiating process now, in spite of the fact that the meetings are public, there still is not a great deal of public input into the process, into the negotiating process. Whether, and if it goes to an arbitrator, I think that would even lessen the public input at that level. And by opening up to where the borough assembly would have, or city council would have to approve the arbitrator decision, that would allow public input. It might cause some problems on the assembly, but it would also allow the public input because then it's out in front of the public one more time, and generally those assembly meetings get more coverage than do the negotiating process.
In the current 130 proposal, there is a mechanism as part of the mediation arbitration process, the arbitrator can call for a public hearing, and so there is that potential built into the process as it's proposed in 130. So that opportunity for public input exists, and for the arbitrator to seek to be educated in terms of what the local circumstances are and specific public reaction to the proposals that are before the arbitrator is there.
I realize that, but also many times, I mean, the reason we have Representative Hanley.
I guess the only thing that I wanted to interject at this point was that the whole process of bargaining and negotiating is, for the most part, closed. Now you can opt, and we had quite a to have open negotiations, and we went through that battle last year. You know, and there are arguments on both sides. I know that Ketchikan does have open negotiations. Anchorage does not. It's all pretty much behind closed doors. It was my impression that AEA was very much opposed, at least. In Anchorage, the Anchorage Educational Association was very much opposed to the open negotiation process when we went through that discussion and argument and whatever. I think it ended up a 4-3 vote that it would be continued to be closed. And as I said, there are good arguments on both sides, but I still think, you know, for it to be open for the public, they can't participate at that point. They're not open to the public for discussion, but at least they could perhaps, if they wanted to avail themselves of that process and sit in and see what was happening. They could, and then call a school board member, I suppose, if they had some concern about what was happening.
I have three thoughts that might help with this whole discussion. One being the law and the bill itself call for open bargaining unless the two parties agree to go into closed session. So it's business. We're going into executive session or closed session is... It's only if both parties want that to happen.
Right. Yeah, but you have to... Well, you have to...
It's by mutual consent. And it's very clearly spelled out.
Okay, because we ended up as, you know, AEA very definitely wanted closed, and then the school board had to vote, and we ended up on a 4-3 vote.
And the second piece on that is that, theoretically at least, the board members themselves do represent that public. The public has the opportunity for the input. At least, I think that's their role. And thirdly, in terms of the outsider making the decision, or the arbitrator coming in and breaking the bank, the fact is, 130 says local people will write that decision. The arbitrator has no authority to write the decision. Local people will be doing that, the teachers or the school board. So that decision is going to be made, or it'll be drafted by those people. I'm assuming that both parties would have an obligation to convince the arbitrator that one, they either couldn't afford it, or if you're talking about money, or on the other hand, the money was there.
Yeah, just thinking on that a little bit. We get into this a little bit. You know, are we talking to? I feel very strongly that we should be talking about a last best package. If we're talking item by item, we didn't say how many items could be left. And even though we're talking that what can we afford and what can't we afford, some of the things that don't appear to, maybe on the surface, don't appear to be monetary. If you're talking about planning time, that's always been a big issue in Anchorage. And planning time, to achieve planning time, seems like every time we've achieved it, we've had to hire, we achieved it by hiring a PE teacher for every elementary school, music teacher for every elementary school. The big push was to hire an art teacher for every elementary school. That comes with a pretty high price tag. So even though you're saying planning time, you're not talking, it doesn't appear to be money. You're talking about a very high economic impact that has on the local economy. I guess my basic question is, when does this all go in its binding? You know, what's the last package that we're going to be bound by now? What can we put into this last thing? Where in this whole process do we get down to the place where the arbitrator is going to decide this or this, and you're bound in all of these?
In 130, and I've made some formulation.
In 130, in
130, that comes after mediation failed. You call the arbitrator in. You present, both parties presented the arbitrator with your final offer. The arbitrator tried to get the two parties to agree or to work out the differences. The arbitrator is unable to do that. Both parties are allowed an opportunity to revise their last offer, give it to the arbitrator. The arbitrator then chooses. At that point is when the final decision is made, if they haven't together worked it out earlier.
In your district, aren't the school board people elected? Now, just picture in your mind these teachers and school board sitting down and negotiating. I ain't going to bring in the city council.
No, that's not what we...
Okay, I misunderstood you then. With the city council, after they had made
borough
the decision...
Borough Assembly in this case.
Okay, well, the Borough Assembly.
But what it would
I
be...
I didn't quite understand how you...
What it would be, actually, is only in the points that were brought to arbitration. That way, see, I agree that the school board members represent the public. Okay? That's the intent anyhow. They sit down to mediation and they come up with whatever they can agree to, and what they can't, they send to an arbitrator. Last best offer. The arbitrator still makes that decision between the last best offers. The arbitrator is not subject to the public. Now, the borough assembly is subject to public. I mean, they're elected by the public too. We could even write a provision in where if they didn't take action, it automatically passed through. Something like that. Just because this is what we're attempting to do here is, I think, serve the best public interest. And whatever means we have to take to do that, I think, including letting it go through one more hurdle or over one more hurdle, is something that we probably ought to at least look at and consider for adding into the bill. We're not talking about the negotiating process as a whole. All we're talking about is the points that go to arbitration, Representative Davis.
So what are you saying then, basically, is that after all the negotiations take place, then you have the borough assembly that's the veto, that works as a veto over...
Right, on the arbitrate points. They can either accept them or say go back and do it again.
There's no precedent for any type of thing. Like, either you negotiate or you don't. Well,
I guess I'd have the same question as Red, as, you know, what, you know, has that happened in practice in any place, and, you know, I'd really want to know something about that.
If
because
I could give an example, might give the committee a little assistance. I'm with the Division of Labor Relations, and I'm involved under the Public Employment Relations Act, and that act contains a little clause that says that the monetary terms of any collective bargaining agreement entered into under it are subject to funding through legislative appropriation. And in a practical sense, the legislative review process of our contract's terms does function as the kind of check I think the chairman is discussing. So I'm just throwing that out for your consideration. It might be worth looking at.
Well, you know, that's... I understand what you're saying, and you know, we sort of come under that kind of... that discussion, anyway, takes place on, you know, just because they've negotiated a settlement, that they still have to be, the monetary figure has to be approved by the legislature, but we don't go back to a negotiated settlement and say, well, in this negotiations, we're not going to go along with the health benefits or something like that. Basically, it's a up or down on the dollar figure, as far as I'm...
Yeah, that's been the practice, and then our interpretation over there. That if you ever rejected it, then we'd have to go back to the table and come up with a new package to present for you.
I have a question. Do they fund according to what the package that has been negotiated, or on the formula funding for the schools? I mean, for the whole package for the school district. I mean, because then it seems like if a contract was in place and you only gave them so much money and it didn't include the raises, then the school district might be forced to cut in other areas. Representative Hanley.
Yeah, I guess your hand's pretty well tied, because the district that I'm familiar with, 85% of our entire budget was salaries, so there's only 15% that you can do anything else with. And then our budget has to be approved by the municipal assembly, so that if they've decided that the increase this year was 10%, the cost of living actually was only 4.5%, you're not justified in raising your budget by 10%, and yet an arbitrator came in, and we were bound by this final decision. We've had all the arbitration, we've gone through all of these things, and we got to impasse last year, and we went to arbitration. And the arbitrator came in, looked at both sides, and then came back and, you know, made some suggestions. I think both sides went back. I guess we were close enough that we both went back and made some concessions on both sides, came in and reached an agreement. And I guess that's ideal, and probably in the history of the state it's gone that way, except for that one strike. And maybe some of them are carried on a lot longer period of time than ours was, although it's not a short process. It's a very time-consuming process. But anyway, I think that what you're saying does, you know, does make sense. If the award was one that certainly was within the scope of the municipality of funding and would fit within, you know, a reasonable increase in the total salary package for teachers. Plus, you got 11 more, in our situation, you have 11 more elected people. And maybe take it out of the hands of an emotional body if the school board became more emotionally involved with that and put it in for final approval.
Well, I was just thinking, now that I think of it, the Borough Assembly also approves the budget of the of the school district in Kenai, but then what happens if they don't approve that budget?
Then it cuts.
Do you have to make cuts, or do you get to go back and make a new agreement?
You make cuts in other areas.
That doesn't leave any discretion in. I mean, that leaves no room within those budgets to make cuts, I don't think. Mr. Green?
School boards, I think, would be happy in getting a third party to involve only to the extent of the finances. A couple of options. One is a kind of a drastic one. Make the school boards fiscally autonomous. They have the right to set the mill rate, like municipal assemblies and borough assemblies and that sort of thing. And that's not going to sell.
No.
And the only reason why I mention that is because in other states, that is the way it's done. The school board does set the mill rate for education. That's not necessarily what I'm suggesting. It has been proposed at other times to mirror exactly what the state does, that we would submit to the borough assembly the cost of any arbitrated settlement. The difference between what is currently in the budget and what the arbitrated package would cost financially. And the reason for it is we somehow have to put that decision back into the accountability process of making elected officials accountable for expending the public's funds. And that would mean, just like the legislature, if the legislature does not fund the raises are not given. If the borough assembly or city council does not fund the arbitrated settlement, the arbitrated settlement must be renegotiated.
the legislature sets its own salaries. Ms. Pierce had a...
Yeah, well, I just had 2 points. One is that if that happened and it had been the school board's settlement that the arbitrator had chosen, and then the borough assembly failed to fund it, that would damage the credibility and the authority of the school board to negotiate at later time. That would tend to undermine the credibility of the school board. And the long-term bargaining relationship is important, so the credibility of the two parties in dealing with one another is an important factor to protect and to try to maintain. The other thing is that I come from Fairbanks, and I am aware of a rivalry and basically a power struggle that's been taking place in Fairbanks between the borough assembly and the school board for the last 3 years.
I can see Chuck Reese in there.
And I would be amazed if the Fairbanks school board would favor this kind of a veto power to be exercised by the
Representative Boucher, did you?
Well, my thoughts were that. Just touched on it. Be a zoo. I mean, having worked at the top, these people in the school board, they run for that. They're totally dedicated to that. And to go through this entire process, I think was key. You said we sat down and we negotiated. Did you have to take what the arbitrator did, or did he keep bringing you together? And wasn't it finally your decision?
I think everybody, maybe one of the little differences.
That's the important thing. The role that the arbitrator is playing here. The people, it is their decision in this particular structure. They don't make a decision, he can't. He encourages them to.
Yeah, well, one of the good points about last best offer is that you choose one or the other so that, theoretically, you come down to as close as you possibly can get, and you just can't come any closer, and he chooses one or the other. If we allow discretion for the arbiter, which we're talking about...
Wait a minute, he doesn't choose one or the other.
Yes, he does.
The arbitrator would choose, do the board or the teacher's final offer.
Yeah, their final offer, right. yes. But he doesn't make a decision, if the two of them can't reach a decision on the thing.
Then he makes, right. The arbitrator makes the decision in binding arbitration, and you're bound.
As to which of the two would be put in place.
That's right, yeah.
Right. Mr. Chairman, the thing I'm thinking about here, I think will not be resolved in almost any kind of wording you're going to do with the bill. That being, if an employer or an employee group takes a position that's so firm, they feel it cannot be chains, that you bring a third party into it, the third party says, your position's unreasonable, that party very likely would be unhappy with the process. And if we're trying to legislate something that would make them happy, I think that's too idealistic. The fact is we're talking about priorities in the budget. I don't know of any arbitration award in the school operation that's caused us to go out and raise property taxes. Now, I can see that if the resolution came early, that might be a part of the budget process, be a part of the request to an assembly, or I can see if it came after the budget process, it might be reordering priorities. But the fact is, and I think you know, that a lot of these school budgets can afford considerably larger settlements than are happening now. Whether an arbitrator would go with that or not, it would be a matter of showing that the ability was there.
I don't think it should be just a matter of what the school board can afford. We happen to be have a lot of resource wealth right now, but it's not always going to be there. We'll set some precedent.
Right, and that would get into the 1 year versus long term contracts. And mostly we're seeing 1 and 2 and 3 year contracts. Sometimes a 4 year, but mostly they're 1 and 2.
Representative Hanlon.
Yeah, I think. So you said something about raising property taxes. Anchorage has got a little Mickey Mouse thing that they're doing now, that they brag about the fact that the mill rate hasn't gone up. Well, the mill rate stays the same, but the thing that does go up is the evaluation of your house. So every year they come through and reevaluate your property, so it increases by 10, 20, 30% or something each year. So you're paying on a much higher assessment for your house. So your mill rate stays the same, but you're paying on much higher property valuation. I guess, you know, the thing that's kind of frustrating here, and maybe trying to protect the management somewhat, management comes in and they're going to give, you know, and labor comes in and they're going to get. So it's, you know, how much can you give and how much can you get is what it boils down to. And it seems to me a couple of years ago that Fairbanks began their negotiations saying we want a 22% increase. I remember it seemed to me, you know, so you start way up here and you come in, you know, labor can come in and says we want, you come in with a stack like that, and management comes in with, you know, a few little things like this that they really feel like this is all we can. You know, we could maybe make an allowance on medical or some of the insurance benefits, or perhaps we can do something with sabbaticals. That was something we could do that, you know, we're willing to look at that because we could do that without costing a great deal of money. We're looking at a cost of living increase plus a little bit. And it's kind of like a crap game, too, I think, because it seems to me a few years ago, you know, the cost of living kept going up, so they settled just about the time I came on it before I came on the board for 8% increase for 3 years, and then the cost of living just dropped, and it was down to 4. So I guess, you know, the school board took a... And I think on the basis of that, then they were looking at maybe 1 year things after that, because that cost of living figure was jumping around so much, but it kept going up, and about the time they really thought they'd done something by settling for 3 years at 8%, the cost of living dropped, so that the teachers did very well. But that's the name of the game. That's how it goes. I guess, you know... I would be a lot more sympathetic to some of the arguments if we were looking at a school district as many across the country. And I think teachers certainly justified in complaining because they're not treated as professionals. And because some of, I talked to a gal in Connecticut, or Washington State, we have a little relative there teaching, and she's up to 17,000 after 6 years or something. You know, and the fact that we've got just about the highest paid teachers in the nation doesn't mean that we can't be doing something to improve the working conditions, but at the same time, I'd be delighted if any one of my children decided to get into the teaching profession, because I think you can be a professional and be well paid. So I'm very proud of that fact. But at the same time, we have to. There has to be a limit, and it's to be. I don't know. To be bound is always a reason for school boards to have a lot of indigestion, to end up, you know, having to be bound by a decision. And I've talked to Mr. Green and said there must be some places where this works, and that's kind of why I was suggesting some of this language. And he has indicated to me that the places where it works, management rights are pretty well spelled out in labor rights, so you get a lot of very specific language in that pretty much dictates that process, and then you can't have a binding arbitration agreement that will work. So
beyond the vote, if I can be philosophical for just a minute, this thing has been sitting down, and this labor and commerce has been a negotiating place, and it's just been the last time it was management. And hey, they didn't get a hearing. No. So really what we're dealing with are the people out here and their rights to participate in this system. Granted, they're in a highly sensitive area. We occasionally lose sight of that. I guess that's what I keep focused on. Why the teachers? Why are we so afraid to let them bargain? The second-class citizens, they can't strike. I mean, hey, it is. It's a fact. I mean, they're denied an opportunity, and this has been one of the emotional arguments on the thing that have been made in the past.
Well,
it sat here last year. You couldn't even get a hearing on the subject. People were afraid to let it get to the floor because I think an issue such as this, hey, everybody has got people calling them up into their ear one way or the other, and 9 times out of 10 I usually vote in what I believe in, then trust that collective bunch of Alaskans out on the floor to get the floor. So I guess my frustration is, hey, it darn near got to the floor last year, passed the House, it passed the Senate, and maybe it would have failed out there, but it never got, and I hope that this year, because we get it to the floor. Hey, I'm going to stand up and speak for it. It'll probably be the management side that speaks against it. But I think only then will we get a good bill. Hey, I don't feel qualified, and I've read it and read it and read it, you know, to really look at. I would want a good bill. I would want something that everybody would be happy with. But I think one of the things that I'd hope we would do in a work session, instead of proposing other things, let's deal with those things that are sticky, that appear to be a problem, which are, as we talk about, dealing everything in a package or a unit at a time.
Yeah.
I really had hope, because I wanted to listen to some of the pros and cons on that, because I do have a question.
Thank you, Mr. Boucher, Representative Boucher. In fact, this bill is an administrative bill.
Mm-hmm.
That by no means gives it undue credibility. I mean, it's our job as policymakers to come up with what we think is the best bill to pass to the floor for discussion on the floor, and that's what my intention is.
I know it. I know it. But I would like to have it follow some process that we are going to discuss the binding arb. If we don't like binding arb, then on to the next thing. But I don't see we're going to thrash it around and make a good bill. But you're the chairman. And if it doesn't move, why then fine.
I was just considering yielding the chair and let you handle it.
No, no, hey, it's a sticky wicket. Nobody likes it. I stand right up in front loud and clear and say, I am for binding arbitration. I send that message out. And hey, the letters pour into me. Well, so I guess I just want to push the green button on it and see it happen. And then if they assassinate me 2 or 3 years from now on, so be it. That isn't got anything to do with this. But I'm just frustrated that we can't reach, not you, a decision on this thing. Get it on both floors. And then let the palms pour in. Maybe I'll ought to push the other button. I don't know.
Representative Collins.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Boucher and I usually agree on everything, and I agree with this is an important issue. It is kind of an emotional one, but I do think that because it has been around so long and because it is emotional that we try to do as much work as we need so that when it does get to the floor, it goes, that we don't sit on the floor for 3 or 4 days and debate that this is really disorganized. And I really support you trying to get the work on this bill so we can clean it up and get it out.
I wonder, maybe we should have some discussion. One of the points that you just brought up that Representative Boucher talked about was, are we going to talk about the last best package? Or are we going to talk about item by item? So I think every bill talks about the last best offer. Maybe we should have some kind of, discussion on what is, are we talking about the last best package offer or the arbitrator can pick and choose?
I guess so. I guess that's my point.
Yeah, so that might be good.
Make it too well. Is when I sit down to discuss something at a work session, I don't know what I'm discussing. I think we passed the point where we just need to generalize on the bill. Where is our problem with this? I have none. It's fine. I'm ready to vote for it now. But other people do. So let's arbitrate right here. Let's get down to what we need to.
If we can't make a decision, we'll bring in
if you got a sentence or two that's going to make this sail through the house, if you do, I want to watch you walk on water, too.
Well, I've been trying to think of something. Excuse me, I'm out of order.
No, I am.
I guess it seems to me, and I do apologize for being late, that the concern is that the consensus seems to be that the committee is binding arb isn't really all that bad, providing that there are some constraints on the binding arbitration, or whoever does it. That seems to be the flavor I'm getting from some of the comments. How many people in the committee would be in favor of, I guess I'd like to know how many people would be in favor of binding arbitration with some direction to the arbitrator. And in the people I've talked to, the problems they've had is that the arbitrator is kind of out there freewheeling it, and that's a concern. Not so much with binding arbitration, so much with what the arbitrator is liable to do.
I'm also wondering whether there's a possibility, after you go through the mediation process and there are things you just can't agree on, but some of them may be very close, right? But you still can't agree on them, they're real close. Then should you leave the discretion for the ones that are close enough you think will be resolved to the mediation process, or pass them on to binding arb? And if you pass them on to binding arb, then is there room in there for them to expand on the things that came out of mediation with?
I can respond. I think in general, the process is a, when there's good faith bargaining going on, the process is a narrowing process. And again, it would ruin the credibility of a party to expand upon a position and a step further down the road towards coming to agreement. But if you did that, or if, and it does happen sometimes, it's a bad faith kind of a gesture, and it doesn't, it's not, in general, the parties are striving for the agreement.
Mr. Chairman, on page 6, this appears to me in all my notes and what have you in the gut. That is page 6. I'm referring to House Bill 130.
Okay.
Page 6, line 19. The arbitrator shall, without modification, adopt the last best offer of one of the parties, and shall issue a finding and final decision not more than 10 days. And I've got a note down here. Total package on one side, issue by issue on the other side. I'd like to have somebody explain to me an example of issue by issue. In other words, how does that process, how do we arrive, if we agreed on an issue by issue, how would that function? Which appears to be, my thought was that there are more issues than economic issues. In some areas you might be just negotiating something else. But I guess I need a clearer understanding, and I think maybe in asking that question there might be a point that we might be a little hung up on. I don't know.
Mr. Chairman? I wonder if, you know, I think Mr. Cooksey and Mr. Green both probably presented good points on this the other day.
Yes.
Could we hear those again? I think you had some good points on item by item, and Mr. Green had points on total package. So could we, I think those are the people who probably have the most experience.
Mr. Green, would you like to join us here? Representative Pierce will be here today.
See, the doctor.
Oh, that's right. We don't have Ms. Tate today.
Oh.
Excuse me up there.
I just want to state, too, that in reference once again to your comments earlier, Representative Boucher, I don't intend to unduly hold this bill up. It's just that every other day something else comes up in my mind that I have a question about, and I don't want to hold it up simply because I have questions. So
sure.
This is one bill that I would like to leave at the mercy of the committee. If we decide that it should be,
I can understand. I mean, I appreciate that. I'm pushing on.
Okay. Last best item by item.
The last best package would be simply that the arbitrator would look at both of the package, all of the items inclusive. And you either take one side or the other. On item, there's a possibility that he could take the basic salary package, could be the board's package, or the board's last best offer. The health insurance, it could be teachers, reimbursement for travel could be the board's. Item that would be a fund for a discretionary fund for purchasing instructional materials, that could be the teachers. There are many different items that could be in there. He would separate the items out and rule on each one. He would not be able to have flexibility between the items. In other words, if the board's last offer was, would say, we will pay 100% of the current dollar that it costs for health insurance, and the teacher's offer was, we want 100% paid regardless of what the price is. If it escalates, we want that to be part of the agreement. The arbitrator would not have the ability to say, well, if it goes up 10%, we'll...
Is that your understanding?
Yes, as far as how it would work.
Doing technically, the, I'm worried about the technicality. Technically, what his statement was correct.
Okay. Yes, I think so.
Now, may I ask just one question to that? Now, suppose there were 10 items out there. In other words, you could get one, teachers could get one, or vice versa. Which is not, whereas the package is, hey, you win it all or you lose it all. Isn't that a fact?
Yep.
Now, suppose there were 10 items. We only settled 8.
You
just settle 8 of the 10 items that have been brought up.
Prior to arbitration.
Now, let's say we couldn't solve anything. So we brought 10 items to the table. We solved 8 of them. Let's say the school board had 4, the teachers had 4. Now, is it mandated that we solve the other 2 items? Or could both items, other 2 items be solved the way they are? I'm sure this is a stupid question.
I think the intent is if you had 10 issues and all 10 would be resolved, you would either resolve them through those mediation efforts or through the arbitrator's effort to mediate, or the arbitrator would choose either party A or party B's last position on each of those items that remain unsettled.
Okay, so the last 2 would be solved then. They would have been the last best offer that was made.
But one of the parties' offers could be. There'd be no contract item, and there'd be nothing in the contract on this issue.
As a matter of fact, the 2 parties might agree to drop that issue, but I can't assure you that would happen.
Okay.
If the 2 parties couldn't agree on what's going to happen to it, then it would be a case for the arbitrator to find and decide. The arbitrator's decision, though, would be limited to either the position the teachers took or the position the board took. The arbitrator still wouldn't have the flexibility to design a different decision.
Representative Davis.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Now I have a better understanding of issue by issue versus package.
Well, I think that's the, I don't know what question I had. What, who put this in that they wanted to take either one item or one... one package or the other package. That seems like that would be sort of a Russian roulette. I don't know who would want that. Obviously, if somebody did it, it would be in the bill.
Mr. Chairman, the bill was proposed this way. I think, as I understand it, the governor's office thought that would cause the 2 parties to want to get to the settlement at the table. And I think Bob shared that thinking with you the other day. I think theoretically that's true. There would be some additional pressure to go a little further. The reason we're proposing the item-by-item approach is that we think it can prevent a total win-lose situation. We think it would allow both parties to have some win and hopefully would be a better balanced contract in the end.
Representative Hanlon.
I guess, we've been talking about win-lose situation, and some of this is still very vague to me, but it seems like it's going to be both of those parties, if it's going to be this package or yours. We know how close we've gotten in this whole process. Now, if I'm going to be hanging out there for 10% increase and you're saying 6%, my last best offer, I might want to get a little bit closer, but I risk losing maybe 7, or maybe I could say 7.5 or something, or maybe I could say 7, and if he's going to take the last best, I don't know. He might think that 7% is more reasonable than 6. I might have a chance of getting 7, but I probably know I'm not going to have a chance of getting 10 if the parties are not stupid, and they probably know what other labor agreements have gone for, kind of thing, the right ballpark. But I don't know. So when you say it's lose all or win all, I think that you're going to be pretty close. I think it's going to bring people pretty close before that goes to a binding arbitration if it's going to be a total package. And it may not be your package, but I can't see where you'd lose everything. I mean, I would like to think that it would make it would force the parties to come closer on the whole package.
My thought, Mr. Chairman, excuse me. My thought in this is once they know that there has to be finality in all of this stuff, there's going to be a lot of this cleared up by the school board. But if the whistle isn't going to blow, why, there's a tendency to drag anything on. And I think to that degree there, that's one of the reasons that I support it.
Item by item or package?
No, I'm talking about the binding. I'm still listening on the other because this note was brought in afterwards.
I thought we were talking about package.
Yes,
all right. Along.
Yes.
And then it wasn't until the last meeting that I realized that we were talking item by item.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Mr. Chairman, on the win-lose thing, what I think of there is that you may have another item. It may not be a salary issue, but out of the 10 items, you may have taken a real hard line on a particular one. The arbitrator would be with you on the other 9 items. That one may have been so hardcore because the arbitrator chose the other one. And that's what I'm seeing as a total win-lose. You lose your whole package over one item. And I feel that the item allows a better balanced package. If the arbitrator might then choose with the other side on that item, it might go with you on the other 2, 3, 5.
If that was part of your package, though, wouldn't that cause you to weigh that hard line a little bit?
It should.
Maybe move a little bit?
It should. The fact is, as somebody mentioned Russian roulette, it that chance or that risk factor is there. It's a higher risk factor. And for that reason, theoretically, you should be closer at the table. But as I said earlier, the reason we propose the items, we feel it allows a better balanced package. It allows both sides to save some face, to make some gain.
Mr. Green.
No, I have to disagree with that whole line of thinking. I have to, first of all, delineate some things about management rights and the bargaining process. When management comes to the table, it's just a matter of how much we're going to give away. It's not that we're going to gain anything. We never gain anything in any bargaining process. It's a matter of how much we're going to give away. Now, admittedly, we may gain something that we gave away last year, but we gave it away so that we never gain anything. And the other thing is, we never go to the table and ask that labor give us something, as in operating procedures or so on, because the school district is fully capable of managing the school system all by themselves without the benefit of labor being involved in the management decisions. I'm not getting into the philosophy of joint venture management and all this kind of thing. All I'm saying, I want to get it clear, that when we go to the table, we acknowledge going to the table that we are going to make concessions. We're going to give a pay raise. We're going to give added benefits of some kind. We are going to make concessions regarding who will be involved in management decisions and so on. We are not going to get anything. In fact, the Alaska statutes currently prevents us in a period of recession to go to the table and say, and just arbitrarily, reduce salaries below last year. We have continuing contract law that says that if we don't have an agreement, we will not pay less than what we paid last year. And so, in essence, in this state, say we had a catastrophic economic depression, we could not reduce the salaries unless the teachers agreed to it. So we don't win anything. So let's not talk about a win-lose or win-win or any kind of thing. It's just a matter of how bad we're going to lose. Now, that's bargaining. We understand that. And you understand that I'm probably over-dramatizing the situation. But let's not talk about the fact that we're going to gain anything out of the bargaining process, management. We don't gain. We just give.
Ms. Pierce?
Well, we could launch into a bargaining session. What? But I'll resist the temptation to you guys. I did want to say, in terms of the item by item, another advantage of item by item, as we see it, is it helps the parties after the bargaining process is over. As I said before, you know, the long-term relationship, the bargaining relationship between management and labor in a particular school district, it's an evolving relationship, and it's one that one hopes evolves to more and more positive levels, but that's not necessarily a consistent trend. But one of the things that an item-by-item resolution would help with is that the feeling of acceptance of the final package and the feeling of it would enhance the chances of a continuing positive relationship after the package has been returned.
Okay. Representative Davidson.
Thanks. But obviously, you people at the table all the time. But Bob, I can't let that comment go by that when you go to negotiate, all you do is, you know, is lose. I mean, I think I haven't sat in any negotiations, but I think in the spirit of negotiations, people learn a little bit more about each other and about about the needs of management and the needs of the teachers. So I can't see that it's always a lose situation. Now, maybe that's me being naive, but I can't help but think that there's something that comes out of that that's to the benefit of not only the teachers, but the management, too. Could be wrong.
I won't argue the point that there's a lot of communication that goes on there. I'm just arguing the point that there's any way that we can come up better economically or managerial than when we went in. But that's philosophical. If I could just address this for just a minute. I provided this for you, and it's a composite of labor relations laws in other states. And the purpose for it is that it's our feeling in the state of Alaska over the last 10 years that we have taken a head-in-the-sand approach to binding arbitration. And I'm not going to deny that I'm opposed to this, but I'm not also so naive to say that maybe sometime we're going to have it. And so if we are, then let's look at what other states do and take a look at how they construct laws. Now, there are some general principles that you will see that is a thread that runs through other state statutes. One will be that the terms and conditions of bargaining is very general, and it will go along with the weekly languages, wages, benefits, time off, and things of that nature. Very general. And then there's usually a phrase in there that says, however, nothing in this agreement requires the parties to make a concession. Okay. On one hand, it's very general. You can talk about anything you want to. But on the other hand, there's not much process to force them to come together. And then the other thread is that you'll notice, I think, Pennsylvania, Iowa, Indiana, don't hold me to the names of the states, but the documentation is there. Yeah, there are several states there. And the things I'm doing this by memory, as I recall, those states do more to delineate what is bargainable. You'll see the language there, and it seems to be quite consistent that they want to spell out the rights of the employees and the rights of the management. And then they're a little more structured. Having done those kinds of things, then they're a little more structured on the formal process that probably forced people to come together. We haven't done that in this state yet. Every bill that's been seriously considered by this legislature wants to have the best of both worlds by, certainly not my standards. They want to have very general and vague items that constitute what is bargainable. They haven't really defined that very tightly. And then they want a finality process so that everything goes. The author of this letter, Robert Hellesley, is a labor relations specialist in the state of New York. He advocates binding arbitration. I'm not going to just dig out a bunch of people who tell you my perspective. This guy says binding arbitration is the way to go. He recommends it in the state of New York, but he also recommends a very structured process. He was a director of the Labor Relations Agency in the state of New York, and essentially it taught me a lot of things about what ought to be in a binding arbitration law if you're going to construct one. And one of the things that I said before was he recommends something different from what's bargainable to what's arbitrable, that there has to be those penalties and that sort of thing. I provide that for your information. You may find it interesting to see what other states do along the lines of labor relations law in this area, labor relations.
Representative Davis.
Well, I have to leave here in just a couple of minutes, but when the Supreme Court made the decision that classroom size wasn't a negotiated item, did they delineate any other items besides just classroom size?
Yes, sir. About seven others.
So then, even though the statutes haven't given us some directive, the courts have.
Yes, on the items that were submitted to them.
So okay. You could say we do have some direction on what's negotiated.
Oh, yes. Okay. Not in statute.
Not in statute, but
And the Supreme Court, as was pointed out to you before, the Supreme Court rather chastised the legislature for not doing it. I'm just conveying the message, so don't shoot the messenger for saying that. But that is part of the Supreme Court text. They strongly advocate that the legislature set in statute a more clear direction as to what is pardonable. And the reason for that is that as time changes, the circumstances and the bargainable items will change. We may be talking about class size today. Tomorrow, we may be not worried about class size because now we're going to be worried about computer-assisted instruction and related issues. And certainly the Supreme Court has not had that in front of them. So now all of a sudden we've got a whole new set of items that we've got to get a ruling on.
Representative Collins.
This idea of having the arbitrator go issue by issue is that consistent with what was done in other areas of planning?
I'm not sure how many states have issue by issue. They're
both the requirement would be a number. Some will have some of that. Some will have allow them to split the blanket. Others will say package.
The fact is, there are not many states with planning arbitrations or public sector. And on the item by item, even fewer. I think Connecticut, for instance, does. But I can find that out for you later. The thing I do want to emphasize, though, and I have tried to before, is that the legislature in 1970, 15 years ago, legislature provided the right to bargain. And it was interpreted pretty broadly. It was for the teachers. The school districts wanted to tighten it. We wound up with three lower court cases. Those were all appealed to the Supreme Court. The Supreme Court has addressed that issue. It doesn't deal with everything. But the fact is it has covered enough things that neither the boards nor the employees have been back in court over that issue in terms of trying to define scope. I'm saying this because this whole package here deals with scope. It doesn't deal with whether or not there should be binding arbitration to resolve hang-ups. It deals with what should they be able to bargain. And I see it as the same thing we've dealt with for about 6 or 8 years. Something keeps coming in to add to the issue. Are we going to deal with impasse resolution or not?
But you want to do it in big, broad, general terms. And I think what I hear Mr. Green saying is that where it has been successful, what people have had it as finality, they have, you know, I hear people saying, well, we don't need 10 pages when we can do this in 4. What can we do it in 4? I think it's those broad, general terms that I'm objecting to, and I want some very specific guidelines. If I'm going to push that green button when I say binding arbitration, you know, and I've told your group in Anchorage and everyone that I'm willing to listen, you know, but it seems to me if it, and I've asked Mr. Green, obviously it's worked. I've been to many school board conventions that say it hasn't worked, you know, and that's basically where I'm coming from. But where it has worked, they've had things pretty much boom, 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 and, you know, if I guess, you know, I'm willing to use that experience and look at places where it's worked and see what they've got and see what we need to do along that line to put together something that maybe could work here, too.
Mr. Chairman, here's what I'm seeing is that the legislature has said to employees, you have a right to bargain on these things. What I see us faced with now is in order to get an impasse resolution, we've got to give up that right on some of those things. You don't have the right to strike. We'll give you arbitration on these three things. You know, it's a price to pay that I would hope you aren't asking the employees to pay.
I just think, you know, through the years as I've looked, you know, you see strikes, and the bottom line, it seems like every time I see a strike, it's not settled on an extra hour. It seems like the settlement always comes down to wages. It seems like, you know, what the final, you know, it starts off with pie in the sky and great philosophies, but when we get, when push comes to shove, we're talking about wages. So even though we might have to do a lot of bargaining and making decisions about a lot of other things, that final thrust is, how much am I going to make next year?
Representative Collins.
I have a question, Mr. Cooksey, just to make sure I understand what you said. You indicated that teachers do not have a right to strike, and by arbitration would have an opportunity then to negotiate. Are you saying that by putting some limits on arbitration that we would be limiting your ability to have some input on items that you would otherwise be able to bargain on if you were able to strike? If you were able to strike, are all those items that would it be equally important for you to have go through item by item, all those issues that are often questions such as classroom size, would those be things you would be able to negotiate if you had the right to strike?
No, let me clarify in terms of what I could negotiate. I think the court has pretty much given us direction on that. What I was saying is, if you only provide an impasse resolution on some of those things, my question is, how do you resolve it on the others? And I think what you would be doing is saying to teachers, you're not going to have impasse resolution on the others. You can't strike, you're not going to have arbitration. So you can go to the table and talk about it, but that, you know, the board has final say. If we don't...
Not as long as you're there bargaining. And that's the intent there, is to force you to stay there without going to the arbitrator to bargain those issues if you want them bargained. And the second thing is that you come back and your position has changed, and I guess I'm asking the question, is NEA Alaska willing to officially now say that the Kenai decision does in fact give us authoritative direction? Because in other circles, you have disputed the fact that that, in fact, tells us that those items are not bargained for. I'm confused now, and I'm just asking a question.
If he's looking for the record, what the record says is districts do not have to bargain on those items. Is that what you're asking?
Yes, that's what I'm asking.
I think we all agree that that's what the court says, that the boards do not have to bargain on those items that they consider non-negotiable items.
Ms. Pierce?
Yeah, I wanted to get back to the point that you made a bit ago, which was that strikes were a deterioration in the bargaining relationship always surrounds a money item.
The bottom line. Because I know a lot of other things come into the process, but when you get right down to the last bit, it seems like you're looking at wages and financial or benefits that have monetary.
Excuse me. One of the points that I tried to make in written testimony that I submitted to the committee earlier was that in my experience, in most instances, between management and labor, bargaining takes place and there's a constructive and it's a workable process. The problem comes in the strike more often. People have to really be pushed to say I'm going to strike. And usually it doesn't have to do as much with an issue as it does with a set of issues or a set of even personalities involved or a history, but it doesn't happen on a one-time basis. Strike doesn't generally occur on a one-time basis over one item. There's a history behind it and it's been provoked by a series of moves or positions that have been taken. And I think that what we're trying to secure with an orderly resolution with a binding arbitration is that, and also why the Labor Relations Agency is so important to us, is because in those instances which the parties are not bargaining in good faith, or that there is a consistent obstruction to the process. Right now, under the current advisory arbitration, there can be one obstruction after another, and there's no body to which to appeal for recourse. And what we believe the 130 provides is both labor relations agency, which is a body to which we can appeal when there is irresponsible behavior in terms of the bargaining, and also and that's a two-way street. I mean, that's something there for the boards to appeal to as well, and also provides an in so that as is the case right now, one party can simply say no, we're not going to settle in the new nowhere. This provides that mechanism that says here's a settlement.
I just wanted to make one quick statement about the Labor Relations Agency that gives me heartburn, too, because I think that we just heard that the five people are the ones who have all the experience. That's not going to work. According to 130, it would be too much for that group out of wherever the Labor Relations Organization. We're supposed to get three there and two more appointed by the governor, and one person told us that wouldn't work, so we'd have to have three people appointed by the governor, and that's what they would suggest instead of that five-member thing that is presently, or I guess it's in there. A revised 130. Now, so we're going to have three people appointed by the governor, and I think we're all aware of just the recent directive that the governor had in the Alaska Airlines strike. So it seems to me that the governor always comes down the part of labor, so I'm going to have a little bit of heartburn about those three people appointed by the governor. Well, that part of 130 gives me a great deal of distress as well.
Representative Collins?
I was going to say that part of 130 gives me a problem too, because no matter who's governor, it's going to make a difference. And so that really bothers me.
I might point out that there's really no difference in the mechanism of appointment between the first version of the bill and the second, because the existing Labor Relations Agency that they were going to add two gubernatorial appointees to is, in fact, a body that's appointed by the governor. They are appointed for six-year terms, I believe, right now, but they're appointed as members of the personnel board, and they thereby become members of the Labor Relations Agency. So who appoints them hasn't changed at all.
Have they ever been confirmed by the legislature, any of those? You know, so many appointments are. I think that was something.
No, I think they've always just been administrative appointments.
Okay, due to the lateness of the hour, and I have another meeting to go to in just a few minutes, I'd like to schedule another work session on this the first part of next week, and it's going to have to be probably sometime at night. So I'd like the committee members to get give me a call after you check your schedules and let me know when you would be available. And also what I'll do is whenever we have it, I'll make an announcement, and we'll ask other legislators also to participate if they like, and I'd like to notify you people and ask you if you would participate also.
Oh, do we have the five-day rule that affects that?
Not if it's a work session.
Okay.
Ruling of the chair.
Beg pardon?
That's for her first hearing.
Yeah. Have you set a date on the work
session? This is down on the schedule for next week somewhere.
We're scheduled for next Thursday, I think, is when this bill is scheduled again. But I'd like to have, we've got to have more time to hash things over and come up with some discussion about it.
Monday's fine with me.
Monday night?
Yeah.
Okay, well.
Sure,
probably okay.
Fine with me.
Monday's probably fine.
Monday at 6 or 7? Or?
We don't get done with.
We'll just come down the block.
Well, just walk down the hall from
where are we going to we have it here?
Maybe
6:30
or something. I don't know.
Depends on how many people we have. I'll try to schedule a bigger room if we can get participation.
Probably use Hess, and we'll probably be finishing up. That'll give us a good
okay. We'll set it tentatively then for Monday night. What time would 6:30, 7?
6:30. We've got to chase people out of bed for those reasons for ending.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman, Gail will be able to cover that time I want, but a thought's going through my mind, and I'm not sure how you can take it and move it, but I could see that we could tie this thing up for 19 more months. And it seems to me that something's going to have to start rolling.
I agree. It seems like we talk about a lot of things, but we really don't make a lot of progress. This is not an easy question.
I incidentally do appreciate the opportunity to work with the committee, but I'd like to help the committee get something done rather than prevent it from getting done.
When they offered me the chairman of this committee, they didn't tell me I was going to have binding arm.
As always, little surprises.
We'll attempt to also to set a time frame for when we'll move the bill out of committee. And we'll notify you if we can come up with something that we think is applicable. It's just
thank you.
Man, there's a lot of questions. With that, the meeting is adjourned. The time is 2:45.